So let's get to our guest now. Rajiv DeMello is Global Macro Portfolio Manager at Gamma Asset Management, joining us on the line from Singapore. So we're looking ahead to the jobs report, Rajiv, and that's certainly seen quite a big move coming through in the two-year yield. The risk here that if it is a very strong number, we are going to see an even more hawkish Fed. How do you see this playing out?
Well, thanks for having me, Juliette. Great being on your show. I do think that if the number is very strong, the chances of a 75 basis point hike at end of September at the Fed's next meeting will go up significantly. So that is a concern. But the market has already priced quite a large chance of either 75 or 50. Now, if the number is somewhat weaker, that wouldn't take away the chances of 75. The important number after that will be the CPI coming in about 10 days' time. So we really need to see both of these very important numbers pointing to stronger labor market and higher CPI to really push the Fed into the 75 basis point side.
You say that some of this has already been really priced into market. So there is potentially a chance that we can see a lot of assets move out of the low levels that we've been witnessing. But the question of the day that we're asking today is, how much does a bond bear market really matter here?
Well, by definition, we're already in a bond bear market. Where it does matter if bonds continue to decline is that it makes it very difficult for investors to build a balanced portfolio, which is traditionally built between equities and bonds, and eventually some other asset classes like commodities, which give diversification to portfolio. So with bonds on their way down, if they continue to fall, it makes it very difficult for equity holders to continue holding that same level of equities, and does trigger by itself, by the construction of a portfolio, pressure on the equity markets.
You, though, say you're continuing to hold longer maturity US treasuries and also German bonds. So tell us your thoughts here on what kind of economic rebound we are going to see.
Well, the reason for holding longer maturity bonds is really one of confidence restored in central banks. They lost investors' confidence because they lagged on combating inflation. They were very slow to hike rates, but now they've caught up and they're talking a very hawkish talk, and they're actually walking that talk with 275 basis points back-to-back hikes by the Fed, and now an acceleration in hikes by the ECB. So I do think that is restoring confidence in the central banks, which is good for the very long end of the bond market. And that's the reason for my bullishness of that part of the yield curve.
It is a bigger thought here in terms of when we see a global slowdown, what we're seeing in Europe and particularly the war in Ukraine?
That is, of course, a worry. And bonds will eventually react well when one sees a slowdown. Initially, though, we are looking for lower inflation. And that's what the central banks need to see, and bond market investors as well, before they really plunge in headlong. We are seeing some indications of lower inflation coming from like ISM prices paid, which came out yesterday, or core PPI, core CPI. Those numbers are starting to decline, and inflation breakevens and swaps are also declining. And wholesale gasoline prices in the US are really back down quite sharply. They've reached levels where we were in the beginning of this year, or even in October 2021. So that part of inflation is coming off already.
A stronger than expected yuan fix from the PBOC for an eighth day, with quite a strong move there. We saw an earlier move of around 249 pips, I think, earlier in the week too, which was the second strongest on record. What does this kind of show us about how uncomfortable authorities are with the weak yuan?
Well, it clearly shows that they're putting in the big guns to slow down now the appreciation. And that is particularly interesting because when one looks at the yuan against its trade-weighted basket, it isn't all that weak, because of course it does trade with Europe when the euro has been falling, and with Japan as well. So that had been their measure before in the past, was to look at the yuan against the trade-weighted basket. But now they seem to be particularly focused on the yuan's weakness versus the US dollar, which is a sign, which is often interpreted domestically as a sign of confidence in China. So there's obviously a political dimension to this strength of the defense of the yuan levels now.
And when we talk about confidence, I mean, how much does the lockdown in Chengdu kind of really affect sentiment here too? Because, I mean, that's a city of 21 million people at a time when you're starting to see the rest of Asia mostly open up, now locked down.
Absolutely. I mean, after the lockdown in Shanghai, we all remember how long it took for that lockdown to be lifted. Now, Chengdu, for the time being, it's for mass testing. So depending on the results, the lockdown could continue or not. But if it does continue, we could expect another hit to Chinese growth, just at a time when, you know, slowly growth is recovering and confidence might be blossoming. But this is a problem, especially coming so close to National Congress in mid-October.
Yeah, of course, the big question, though, is are they just doing this until then? And do we see a turnaround after that? When you talk about the weakness in currencies, though, you mentioned the yen. We're looking at potentially, you know, this fresh 1998 low here. And we also mentioned the peso falling to an all-time low. How much of a concern is there that we're going to see similar to what we saw in the Asian currency crisis of 1997?
Indeed, the moves are strong, and the dollar has been extremely strong. But I think it's quite different from back then, because back then previously had been a system of quite pegged exchange rates, or closely managed exchange rates to the U.S., and there was a let off of steam in Asia at that time from pegs to a floating exchange rate. Right now, we've had exchange rates flexible, and we've seen move downs already. And central banks have reacted, and many of them have tightened monetary policy as well. In Asia, a bit at a slower pace than what we've seen in Latin America, where they were very quick to hike. So I don't expect a big meltdown in Asian currencies, but that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be pressures on central banks to hike rates in this region.
We heard yesterday that Hong Kong officials are targeting an end to hotel quarantine in November. The SCMP now saying that Hong Kong is going to offer incentives to attract overseas ESG talent. We had Singapore announcing plans to try and get more talent in earlier in the week too. This reopening, hopefully, in Hong Kong, does it bring the Hong Kong story back?
I think it definitely improves the situation for many people who do business with and in Hong Kong, and who have to go in and out. And these quarantine systems, even though the one right now is much lighter than it was before, a huge impediment to business travel and commerce. And so that will improve the Hong Kong story, even though it still remains very difficult.
All right, just a quick final question, Rajiv. What is your kind of, I guess, best call right now, particularly as we do look at the reopening across Asia?
Well, I mean, one thing to note in terms of positive indicators, because a lot of the markets are on the way down, and I still think that they can go further down as we get closer to the FOMC meeting at the end of September. It's really about how hawkish the Fed is going to be.
Yeah.
But if we look at Chinese high yield index, that's one which has really performed well in August. It's up close to 7% since the end of July, and
that's one upside
there.
China high yield. Rajiv DeMello, Global Macro Portfolio Manager, Gamma Asset Management, on the line from Singapore for us. This is Bloomberg.